Hello friends, I'm your host Sujay and I welcome you to the 18th episode of the Meet Stargazers podcast. Our guest today is a park ranger at Death Valley National Park. Today, he will be talking to us about stargazing in Death Valley National Park. Without further ado, please join me in welcoming Matthew Lamar. Matthew, thanks for taking the time to speak to us and I'm excited to talk to you about stargazing in Death Valley National Park.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
How and when did Death Valley National Park begin its journey of protecting its dark skies?
That's a great question. And I don't really think there's a singular answer there, because you can make a pretty strong argument that it started back in 1933 when Death Valley is first established as a national monument. The reason the area was, you know, set under this status of national monument was not necessarily for its night skies. It was more for the extreme environment that we have here. The lowest place in North America, the driest place in North America, and then, you know, the hottest place really in the entire world. But when they set aside 1.6 million acres, which is about 6,500 square kilometers, as a national monument, that means it went under the protection of the National Park Service. And the goal and mission of the National Park Service is to preserve these places unimpaired, you know, their natural resources. And so you weren't going to have a large-scale development here. You weren't going to have condos or resorts kind of popping up all over the place. And, you know, that leads inherently to good night skies. And this was only enhanced several times, but most notably in 1994. Under the California Desert Protection Act, which expanded the size of Death Valley and upgraded it from a national monument to Death Valley National Park, where today we're about 3.4 million acres, which is 13,750 or so square kilometers, making us the size of a U.S. state, making us the size of Connecticut. And so you have this large landmass without much development, where over 90% of it is designated as federal wilderness, which means there's another layer of protection on top of being a national park that, you know, just inherently is going to lead to beautiful, beautiful night skies. And then in the last 10 years, we've even furthered our mission to protect these night skies. We started the process of becoming a dark sky park under the International Dark Sky Association. And in 2013, we became the third unit of the National Park Service to gain the designation of a gold tier dark sky park. And in order for that to happen, we had to institute a lot of changes in how we did our outdoor lighting. We had to create a lighting management plan. And then we also used it as an opportunity to really our night sky programming, to be more consistent with what we offered for the public and visitors that want to come out here and experience these really great night skies.
Have there been any measures implemented in Death Valley National Park to reduce or limit light pollution?
Absolutely. Like I was just talking about, particularly in the last 10 years, when we were working for this designation as a gold tier dark sky park, there are a series of benchmarks that you need to meet. And a big one is improving your outdoor lighting. And so we developed a whole lighting management plan, which you can actually find on the International Dark Sky Association's website. And we started installing, you know, lights that were properly shielded. So they're not just shining their lights up into the sky where they're not needed. And they're shining them, you know, downward on the streets and sidewalks where people actually use them. We installed, you know, proper lighting controls, things like switches where we didn't have switches before, timers, dimmers, motion sensors, all these things. So lights were only on, you know, really when they're needed. And they're also, you know, on at the proper lighting levels. We reduced redundancies in our lightings. You know, why would we need 10 lights when 5 would do? So we've done a lot over the last 10 years to improve lighting throughout the park. But also here at Death Valley, we do have a number of neighbors that own private inholdings within the park, most notably the Oasis at Furnace Creek, which is one of the major resorts in the area, and then the Timbisha people, who have their ancestors have been here for thousands of years, who both these groups recognize the value of dark skies. And, you know, when we came to them with this opportunity to become a dark sky park, they took their own steps to modify their lighting footprint as well. So it's really been a team effort, not just from the park and our concessionaires, but also from our neighbors. And we are reaping the benefits right now. The visitors are, when they come out here to experience the night sky.
What is the quality of night sky in Death Valley National Park?
Yeah, because of the size of Death Valley, again, we're the size of a U.S. state. We're massive. We do get a good level of variance in the park. So each and every year, again, as part of being at your National Dark Sky Park, we have to do an annual report to the IDA. And we take sky quality measurements, which are measured using a sky quality meter in magnitudes per square arc second. But often when I talk to the public about these numbers, they're kind of hard to understand. And so I often find it easier to talk in terms of the Bortle scale, which is a little bit easier. It's a scale that we use to measure brightness, and there's 9 different levels or classes. And a class 1 sky is the darkest of the dark, where you have really no light pollution at all. And then a class 9 scale would be more like inner city skies. That'd be somewhere like Times Square or, you know, the Strip out in Vegas, where really only the brightest planets, the brightest stars are going to shine through. But most of it is going to be lost to light pollution. And so on the scale where, you know, 1's dark and 9 is the brightest, Death Valley falls almost exclusively between class 1 and class 3. So we do have some of those darkest of the dark. Most of those are going to be up in the northern areas of the park. Yubi Hibi Crater is a pretty good example where it lies somewhere between a class 1 and class 2. There's a campground up there called Mesquite Springs Campground, which is recognized by numerous astronomical groups as one of the premier night sky viewing areas in the park, in the area. We also have about 1,000 miles of roadway in this park, and 600 of those miles are dirt roads, which take you into some pretty isolated valleys, such as Racetrack Valley and Saline Valley. And those are going to be closer to your Bortles 1, darkest of the dark. Other areas, such as Furnace Creek and Stovepipe, you're going to be closer to probably a Bortles 3, which is still a very, very good night sky. You're still going to clearly see the band of the Milky Way. You're going to get some exceptional details out there. You're going to be able to see a lot of the Messier objects. So we still have really good night skies no matter where you are. But if you're really searching for the darkest of the darkest, it does help to go a little bit north. And that's just because we, like much of the United States, are impacted by light pollution. You know, I think it's 99% of people in the United States live under a sky that has some impacts of night pollution. And if you are standing at Furnace Creek when we're given a program, we're going to be sure to point out that over the Black Mountains, you can see the light bubble of Las Vegas. It's one of the brightest cities in the entire world. And it does impact 8 national parks in 4 different states. And we are one of those parks that are impacted. So we have some of the best night skies in the country, but you can always be a little bit better. And if you're really searching for it, you can find, you know, the pristine of the pristine here in Death Valley.
Could you please talk to us about astronomy programs in Death Valley National Park?
Certainly. We offer quite a bit. The last year, less than we would have liked. But we're hoping as we move forward to beef up our programs. If you come here in a normal year, we give most of our programming generally in the fall, winter, and spring. So usually starting around November and going through about mid-April. Once we hit mid-April, we're starting to approach triple digits. It's getting pretty hot. And so we don't have as many visitors that are looking to stay here overnight. But during, you know, those fall, winter, and spring months, we will have weekly programs with rangers out either at Harmony Borax Works, which is one of our premier dark sky viewing areas, or the Mesquite Sand Dunes, you know, telling stories of the stars, pointing out the constellations and the planets, talking about their importance, the life cycle of the stars, about the universe itself. And those are really, really popular programs. that we see more and more people wanting to attend each and every year. People have heard of these constellations, but often don't know exactly where they are. So we're trying to offer that to the general public. On top of that, we also do a number of star parties, which are programs that are more telescope focused. We'll either do those in-house, where we'll have four or five telescopes set up, manned by rangers, or we will coordinate with one of the more local astronomical societies who can often bring in 15 or 20 telescopes. And we'll have those out for the public so people can just cycle through these different, you know, different scopes looking at far off deep space objects, you know, globular clusters, you know, different galaxies, looking at the planets. Because if you've never looked through a telescope before, there's nothing that makes it more real, at least in my opinion, than, you know, seeing the rings of Saturn for the first time. I feel like something kind of clicks in your head that, you know, all those things you learned as a kid, it's real and it's out there and you can see it. So we love giving that opportunity to people when they come to the park. Those are kind of our regular programs that we do fairly frequently throughout the year. But the one that I also enjoy the most, I think, is we do have a special dark sky festival, which usually happens sometime in February or March. And this dark sky festival is done in collaboration with NASA, with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, with SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and then our local nonprofit, the Death Valley Natural History Association. And what we do is we bring in some of the best of the best, you know, people from NASA who are working on, you know, the next rover that's going to go out to Europa or go up to Mars. You know, they're working on the things that you see in the news, and they're coming out here to the park to often talk about it and to share that with the public. And it's a great opportunity to not just talk about our dark skies, which are certainly a big highlight, but to also talk about the unique landscape here at Death Valley. When people come to this park, you know, it's really common for people to use terms like, you know, otherworldly, because it is so unique. People have not seen a place like this, but they often don't realize just how unique it is. That term otherworldly is really accurate because we are a test ground for groups like NASA. The Curiosity rover was tested here in Death Valley at a place called Mars Hill. More recently, the landing hazard avoidance technology for Perseverance was tested here in Death Valley. We share a lot of the similarities with places like Mars, where you can study Death Valley to kind of better understand what's happening, you know, on a completely different planet. And so we also really like to highlight that aspect as well, where the night sky is certainly going to play a big role, the stargazing, looking at the planets. But then there's this whole other side to Death Valley, and that we as a park have to offer. And so I hope anyone that's interested in, you know, rubbing shoulders with some of the brightest minds out there and learning more about, you know, space exploration would try and make an effort to come out to this Dark Sky Festival, which we do try and have every year. It's canceled this year, but we're hoping to bring it back in 2022.
Are there any astronomical observatories in the region?
There are. Not right in Death Valley itself, but within several hours drive, which is fairly typical here in Death Valley. You know, we're an hour from the nearest grocery store, so everything's at least an hour away, if not more. Over in Owens Valley in particular, there is the Owens Valley Radio Observatory, which is operated by the California Institute of Technology, Caltech. It's near Big Pine, California, and it's one of, I think, the largest university-run observatories, at least in the United States. And they're doing a lot of really great research into, you know, supermassive black holes and, you know, coronal mass injections from nearby stars, and then, you know, even research into the dawn of the universe. So they're trying to answer the big questions out there. And they usually, I think, monthly tours, and they will bring in people for annual lectures in the nearby town of Bishop, which is a little bit bigger than Big Pine. So they do a lot of really great work. And then not quite an observatory, but a very interesting place also within about a 4-hour drive is the Goldstone Deep Space Communications Complex. It's out of Fort Irwin near Barstow, California. And it's one of three complexes in the world known as the Deep Space Network, which was established to provide the ability to communicate with spacecraft, not only in spacecraft around the orbit of Earth, but, all around our solar system. And they also, I believe, do public tours and have a visitor center as well. And so if you're in the area and you're really into astronomy and night skies, both those areas are worth checking out while you're here.
Are there any planetariums in the region?
Again, not really in Death Valley, though we are looking into get a very, very small inflatable planetarium for the park, particularly for a lot of our youth outreach. But the College of Southern Nevada does have a planetarium over in the Las Vegas area, and it's really the only one in Southern Nevada. And I think they're also a little bit limited at this time. But if you're going to be, and many people, fly into Vegas before coming out here to Death Valley. And so if you're into the night skies, that's certainly worth checking out before you head out to Death Valley, or maybe after you're done with Death Valley when you go back to Las Vegas. So the College of Southern Nevada does have a planetarium in the area, but that's really the only one within a couple hours drive.
Are there any opportunities for nightscape photography in Death Valley National Park?
Absolutely. We are seeing astrophotography really boom. People are really interested in going out there and just taking photos. I'm sure Instagram and social media has done its part in promoting that, but people really are coming out here and they want to learn about the night skies, and they want to take pictures of the night skies, have that keepsake of the time they were in a place like Death Valley. And so some of our more common areas where if you go out there on a busy weekend, you'll see many people set up, and they're often talking with each other and sharing tips of the trade, are Harmony Borax Works, which is a place where we give our night sky programs. It's an old mining site, and there is a wagon there called a 20 Mule Team wagon, which anyone ever uses laundry detergent back in the day, 20 Mule Team Borax, that's what it's named after. That's a really popular item to have kind of in your foreground. And then Badwater Basin, of course, the lowest place in North America. A lot of people like to get astrophotography out there on the salt flat, or any of our sand dune systems, particularly the Mesquite sand dunes, is a really popular area to go out and do some astrophotography. So Harmony, Badwater, Mesquite, all of those work. There's a lot of great stuff that you can put in your foreground, really give it a sense of place. But you really can't go wrong here in Death Valley. We are so big and we have so much to offer that, you'll come here once and you maybe hit one of these spots. And then during your travels during the day, you're going to come across other things. So you're like, this would be another great site to partake in astrophotography. And we at the park have been trying to increase our outright reach in this respect. During our Dark Sky Festival, we do bring in some volunteers who are very experienced in astrophotography, where we will give kind of classes to the people that are looking to get into it so that they can learn the tips of the trade from someone that has that knowledge that they can kind of pick their brain and come away with a really quality product at the end.
Are there any astronomy clubs in the region?
There are. The Las Vegas Astronomical Society is probably the closest to us here in Death Valley. And they do tend to come out to the park at least twice a year to hold star parties in the Furnace Creek area. They'll often partner with one of our neighbors who I mentioned earlier, the Oasis at Furnace Creek, which is that resort. And they'll set up 15 or 20 scopes, and there will often usually be a ranger presence there as well, just talking about the night sky. So it's a great opportunity. We work with them closely. And then we've also worked actually quite a bit with the Riverside Astronomical Society, who has come out here to the park multiple times to help us out for different star parties, to provide their expertise, particularly with the Dark Sky Festival. So both Las Vegas and Riverside, which is Riverside's out of the LA area, we have an open communication with, and they do try and come out here quite a bit to help enhance the visitor experience and work with the park.
Are there any opportunities for visitors to do nocturnal nature trails in Death Valley National Park?
There are. Death Valley is a really unique national park. We are, again, really big. We're the largest national park outside the state of Alaska. And yet we actually don't have a whole ton of what we refer to as maintained trails. A lot of the hiking in our park are through canyons or areas that people have just identified as, you know, being spectacular. And so we don't have a whole lot of these maintained trails, but it gives you an opportunity to walk almost anywhere as part of, you know, part of your experience here. In particular, these sand dunes are really popular for nocturnal visits. You know, you just walk out as far as you'd like and you know, experience a big open sky over your head. Mesquite Sand Dunes is one of the most popular areas for this. It's accessible by any vehicle, but we have 7 major sand dune systems in the park. And so each and every one of these offers a unique landscape to walk through at night, to look for evidence of wildlife while also appreciating the night sky above your head, whether that's during a new moon or during a full moon. It really, really is a otherworldly experience in some ways. It's a beautiful experience. Also, another area besides the sand dunes is Salt Creek. Salt Creek is another little oasis in the desert where there's lots of wildlife. We have a short half-mile boardwalk that you can, you know, partake in. You'll hear a bubbling creek underneath. You might luck out, see some kit foxes or coyotes, and appreciate the nocturnal elements here at Death Valley National Park. Because we are such an extreme environment, a lot of our wildlife doesn't come out until things start to cool down. So we do have tons and tons of opportunities out there. I know just highlighting Salt Creek and Mesquite Flat Sand Dunes or the sand dunes just kind of scratches the surface. But we certainly do offer a lot of nocturnal nature trails.
Where can our listeners find more information about stargazing in Death Valley National Park?
Yeah, I would recommend going to the Death Valley National Park website. So you can find us at nps.gov/DEVA. That will take you to our general website. And we've got a lot of good information on there, including a lightscape, dark sky page, which will tell you, you know, what to bring with you when you're out here stargazing. You know, where are some of the best places to stargaze? And then we'll often also have links to either the Dark Sky Festival or some of our other programming out in the area. If you're interested in learning more, not just about, you know, what to do when you come and visit, but just about night skies in general and what the National Park Service has done to protect night skies and was continuing to do to ensure that when you go to places like Death Valley, you experience a relatively unimpacted sky. I would also encourage you to check out the National Park Service Natural Sounds and Night Sky Division. And, you know, you could just type that in, kind of a mouthful, but you can just type that into any search engine and it will pop up. And they have a lot of great links to the research that the National Park Service is doing, as well as to surveys they've done in national parks all around the country. And you can compare, you know, the quality of night skies at these different locations, whether it's Shenandoah National Park out in Virginia, here at Death Valley, or maybe even a small, you know, historical park in the middle of, you know, Oklahoma or Nebraska. And you can see, you know, the different quality of these night skies. And then the last thing is, of course, you can follow us on social media. Follow us on Facebook or Instagram. We give updates all the time about night sky viewings, big events that are happening, including the Dark Sky Festival. And so by following us on social media, you can, you know, be kept up to date with what's happening here at the park.
Thank you, Matthew, for this precious information. Friends, I hope you enjoyed this episode and found it useful. Death Valley National Park is a unique destination for stargazing and nightscape astrophotography. You'll find useful links and resources in the show notes. If you liked this episode, please consider buying me a coffee. You can find a link to my Buy Me a Coffee page at the bottom of the show notes.